Yes, I will. I'm sorry. I have Representative Reinbold, myself, Representative Gaddis, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Ledoux, and we're ready to go.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have the university with us. Thank you all for being here. You play a key role in our trying to figure out what we're going to do on K-12 and reduce dropout and improve digital learning. Teacher preparation and teacher turnover are essential issues here, and we're ready to get started. Mr. President, President Gamble, are you initiating this or someone else?
No, sir. I'm deferring to my boss's board.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. Regent Mike Powers.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, it's got Dan to join us.
Thank you. And if, for the record, you'd introduce yourself, please, Ms. Powers.
Very good. Mike Powers, Board of Regents, Fairbanks, Alaska. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Joint House and Senate Education Committee. I'm Mike Powers, Chair of the Academic and Student Affairs Committee of the University of Alaska Board and Regents, 27-year resident of Fairbanks. Each of my three children have extensively used the facilities and the programs at the University of Alaska, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. With me at the presenter's table is Dr. Dana Thomas, my immediate right, Vice President of Academic Affairs at the University, and Dr. Rick Caulfield, Provost at the University of Alaska Southeast. In the audience, I'm pleased to introduce Ms. Pat Jacobson, Chair of the Board of Regents, President Pat Gamble, Professor Diane Hirschberg, Director of the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, or CAPER, at UAA, and telephonically, Lexi Hill, Senior Research Associate at CAPER. I believe we have Dean Deborah Lowe of the School of Education at the University of Alaska Southeast, Dean Alan Murray of the School of Education at UAF. I understand there are a number of former educators and administrators and school board members among the membership of the Joint House and Senate Committee. And first and foremost, I'd like to thank you for your service to Alaska as legislators, and secondly, for the role you've played in education circles in your communities. Many thanks to Senator Stevens, who I understand is the original author of SB 241, and other predecessors of this committee who are asking for an open dialogue regarding teacher preparation. I believe this allows for a formative and a strategic direction-setting opportunity as we hear from you as you take the pulse on education matters. And I think it provides additional insights into how to deploy precious resources to educate a citizenry. Very plain-spoken terms, how to get the biggest bang for the buck. I'd like to spend the next hour or so providing an update regarding the biennial report on university efforts to attract, to train, and to retain teachers. It's a very important issue for the Board of Regents, and it's of particular interest to our current chair, previous Academic Affairs Chair Pat Jacobson. It's also of great interest to me for a variety of perspectives. I come from a teaching family. Both of my parents were teachers. My four other siblings began teaching, and all have left the ranks in the lower 48 except one, and I would suggest that probably Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Colorado are struggling with some of the same issues we're struggling with as a nation we do. If my family's any indication of what's happening industry-wide. Secondly, this issue is important to me as a father who actively engaged my own children in UAF programs over the year, and third, as an employer. I'm the CEO at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, and the board of our local community hospital worked closely with the university in financially contributing to the nursing effort, which reduced our nursing vacancy rate from 17% to 6%. I watch as the engineering profession embraces the same type of university-private partnership that's been so successful, and I think it's exciting to be part of early discussions with President Gamble and Chair Jacobson and Vice President Thomas and the chancellors on each campus to bring that same sense of urgency and enthusiasm to the teaching world. Today, you'll hear from Vice President Thomas regarding teacher recruitment and specifically the role of teacher placement services, statistics on hiring, K-12 outreach efforts, statewide collaborative efforts, including job fairs, and efforts of the Center for Poly Research, or CAPR. Provost Caulfield will discuss teacher education, including accreditations, access to programs across the state, graduates and trends in special education, and the exciting prospects of the Alaska Teacher Education Consortium. And then Vice President Thomas will wrap up the presentation regarding retention and specifically address teacher turnover in rural Alaska as a persistent challenge, teacher turnover in special education, causes of turnover, and then what the university and we are doing about it. And growing our own and the focus again on engineering nursing comes to mind. Finally, he'll touch on this mentoring and advising component, which has been a particular push by President Gamble in many respects and in many venues this past 2 years. And then we'll open it up to questions. We'll be glad to take questions as we go along. In the same breath, and as a relatively new region, I'd like to comment on the spirit of the statewide collaboration partnership that I see within the Board of Regents. And this is what allowed us to address this nursing issue 10 years ago. In the unprecedented, as I can tell, effort to reach across to other educational forums such as the state and local school boards. This past year, the regents have met with the Alaska State School Board and the Anchorage School Board and began discussing alignment of curriculum, active place testing expansion, and alignment of tech prep opportunities which allow high school students to have that university credit. So with that, I'd like to turn to Vice President Thomas and begin with teacher recruitment.
Thank you very much, Regent Powers. I think that's an introduction, but a few.
That's right. And we'll let the record show that Representative Sadler and Representative Seaton have joined us. And please go ahead.
Thank you, Regent Powers. Appreciate your comments. Yes, sir. And for the record, if you'd identify yourself.
I'm Dana Thomas, Vice President of Academic Affairs, University of Alaska. From Fairbanks, a product of the Fairbanks North Scarborough School District, born and raised in Fairbanks, so long history working with the school since joining the university. Wanted to spend just a couple minutes before getting into the recruitment element, talking about the university's role generally in teacher education, recruitment, and retention. And I know that you all have a handout that looks something like this one. And I'm talking about that top graphic, if you will. The university's role in teacher education, recruitment, and retention covers a very broad range from everything from junior high and high school interaction through Future Educators of Alaska to teacher education, the actual programs at the university, both bachelor's and master's and special certifications. Alaska Teacher Placement, that's a unit that helps the school district identify teachers both from within the state and outside the state for recruitment into their districts. Teacher Mentorship Programs, and there are two of those we'll speak about, one about rural areas, one for urban areas. And then continuing education, pursuing master's degrees or additional special certifications as teachers move along in their lifelong learning element and related to their promotions. So a very, very broad spectrum of engagement by the university. Across that entire spectrum, research is conducted by education faculty, by the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, and by the UA K-12 Outreach Unit. I'm going to move now to recruitment specifically. Alaska school districts recruit not only within Alaska but at job fairs and universities across the country. Both in collaboration with the UA Alaska Teacher Placement Unit and on their own. Some research results show that teachers prepared in state are more likely to stay in state and be retained, especially in rural areas. But rural districts report being able to recruit only a small fraction of their teacher needs from Alaska teacher education programs. I'm going to now look at the table on the bottom left. The bottom left there talks
Excuse
about
me, can we get a copy? Yeah.
Everybody has a copy?
No. We'll, if we have some more out there, we'll get some to you.
I brought some, so I know they're available. Each year for the last 3 years, districts have hired about 1,100 teachers. About half of those have been experienced teachers already in Alaska. About 140 changed school districts from the previous year, just recycling, if you will. 220 taught Alaska Public Schools before but had taken one or more years off from teaching. And some 140 are experienced teachers already in Alaska, but have not taught here before. Districts hired about 210 new teacher Alaskans, and this includes both Alaska prepared teachers and Alaskans who went to schools outside and then relocated here before becoming teachers in our district. This left districts still needing to hire about 370 teachers from out of state. About 40% of those 370 already had experience in the classroom, but about 60% were new teachers hired from outside. In 2012, 23% of new hires by urban districts were from out of state. So the vast majority for urban districts were in state, as you can tell. 70% for rural districts were out of state. The key message here is teachers looking for jobs in urban districts have trouble finding them because of the competition and the number of teachers available, but rural districts have to look out of state for teacher hires. So those are the kind of the key elements there.
Excuse me, Dr. Thomas, just you're inviting questions as we go along.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Well, that's a shocking figure. 70% of rural have to get teachers around the state. One of the things I've been impressed with lately, for some reason, I keep having people come up to me and say they are either themselves or someone they know are have been an aide in some rural school and working on a teaching certificate. Is that an active program you're pursuing? Are you trying to get teachers' aides more into completing the degrees so they can teach? And I guess to the district, to the commissioner, we're encouraging as well to get as many people who would make good teachers volunteering or working in a school and then eventually going on and getting their teaching certificate. Is that a program you're actively pursuing?
We are. Each of our institutions and Provost Caulfield will address this more specifically. But each of our institutions, schools of ed, college of ed, have active programs to help grow such individuals into teachers. Probably the best well-known one there is the CHEVAC Teacher Preparation Initiative that UAA is running. They're working with a group of paraprofessionals currently in the classroom out in CHEVAC to move them to become full-fledged teachers and or raise their credential level. So, yes, that's a very positive.
It's really good to hear, and I know a good source of teachers. Any other questions? Yes, please.
How many do we graduate from University of Alaska? It's just alarming to me. Do we need to grow that program so we don't have to import so many teachers from out of state?
We have about 200. Diane, you can correct me if I'm off about 200 graduates. You have that figure probably as well per year. And one of the challenges is a fair number of those, about 150, are elementary teachers. And so we're a little bit overproducing elementary and underproducing secondary, and especially challenges in science, mathematics. We've made real progress in special education, which Dr. Caulfield will speak to. So we certainly know where the weaknesses are, where the strengths are. Some of the real challenges is recruiting new teachers into that field. And I'll speak specifically to what we're doing on that here in just a moment.
Interesting point. And by overproducing, you mean you're more elementary or lower grades than there are jobs available?
We produce an awful lot of elementary ed teachers, all right? They generally tend to be place-bound. They want to stay where they are.
Sure.
And so while there's openings in rural Alaska, they tend not to take those.
Of course.
You get the idea. 90% of those apply for a job, a teaching job. Only 20% of them roughly apply for a teaching job in rural Alaska. So those are the kinds of issues that we face.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like the record to show that Representative Drummond has joined us, but I also do have a question. Speaking of place-bound, it comes to mind that if we have folks in our urban areas that are taking college courses and then becoming teachers and wanting to stay, is there a way that we are reaching out and embracing technology, if you will, helping our folks in our rural areas, maybe taking some of those courses online that, again, I'm not familiar with the term place-bound, but I understand it, that are also place-bound in their rural areas so that they don't have to leave their communities, kids, parents, that type of a thing, to actually get most of their education. Do we have that type of a thing going on?
Do you want to speak to that?
Or will you be speaking to it as we go?
We will.
Yeah,
okay.
We will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
The bottom line, and he'll address it more fully, is almost all of our programs are offered through distance and or hybrid programs to provide access for such people to get these certificates and degrees.
Thank you. Yes, Representative.
Do you think that one of the problems in some of the rural areas with respect to retaining teachers, once the teachers are there, is that many of the rural areas have teacher housing facilities that are only available during the school year? So if you got to pack up and leave every summer, and in some of these communities, housing isn't easy to come by, it's pretty hard to retain teachers, I would think.
That's certainly one of the factors that we're aware of. Some of those factors were addressed in a CAPER study about why are some of our graduates not teaching and some of the choices they're making, and housing is one of the elements that comes into that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead, Dr. Thomas.
So each of our institutions, you heard the rather shocking figures on rural education. Each of our institutions and UA K-12 Outreach have special efforts to recruit and grow Alaska Native and rural teachers, specifically to help meet the needs there. UA Southeast has a program commonly called PETAS, preparing teachers and administrators for Alaskan schools. Had 11 graduates in 2012, for instance. University of Alaska Fairbanks has a partnership with the Rural Alaska Honors Institute to recruit rural students into teaching. And they also ran an Alaska Native Teacher Preparation Program, grant-funded, that resulted in 18 teacher certifications, 17 who are now teaching in Alaska. UAA has the CHEVAC Teacher Education Initiative that I mentioned a moment ago. Currently working with 12 paraprofessionals. As noted, most of our programs are distance delivered and or have hybrid distance to help facilitate access for rural and Alaska Native students to take part in the programs. And then the Future Educators of Alaska program, a statewide effort to inspire and support Alaska Native K-12 students to go into education profession, currently engages about 500 high school and junior high school students. So those are kind of the special efforts that are going on.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that each year when you come before us, and it seems like it's repeated each time, so it's kind of hard to have consistent follow through. But when each time we've been mentioning the fact that that there's a problem with preparing the teachers for the rural areas. Now, I know you've got some special programs that you've instituted to help out there, but what about the current teaching in the classes that the prospective teachers are taking? Has there been changes in those classes? Obviously, that's where some of the change needs to happen, so that as they go through, that they've learned some of the things. It's just part of the process, so they don't have to take a special class because it's part of it. And that's one question. And then another question is the same thing with preparing them for today's various students that we have. You know, it's just a total different world than it was used to be even 10 years ago. And so for students that are having all kinds of different problems in the classroom, are we preparing the teachers themselves to deal with that? For the student that maybe has a parent that is an alcoholic or a drug addict or something like that, and there's fear in the home, simple things like where to place them in the schoolroom to make them feel more safe when they're at school, all kinds of things like that. Is that getting into the classroom, or your everyday teachers, your professors that are actually doing the teaching year after year, has their way of teaching changed?
Go ahead. Maybe, but could you clarify the question, Representative? I'm not sure I understood it, and maybe we've been real specific about what the question is we're asking them.
Okay. You have just mentioned the ways that you prepare teachers for by taking a special class, preparing for rural areas or something like that. And I'm thinking of even special education teachers, but for the second part of that question. But you have regular professors that are teaching the way they're preparing students to be teachers, and they're the regular classroom teachers. You call them professors, I guess. So have they changed the way they teach? Or are they still teaching the way they have been the last 20 years? That's what I'm trying to get at. Are the professors themselves changing? Do they have any experience? How long has it been since they've been out in a rural area? How long has it been since they've actually been in a classroom and taught? They have to change. They can't just keep teaching the way they have in the past. That's where I'm coming from.
Mr. Chair, I'm Rick Caulfield. I'm provost at the University of Alaska Southeast, and I work regularly with our deans and our faculty, so I'm happy to try to answer that question. I will say I'm actually a product of the system myself, having earned my master's degree and my teaching certificate from the University of Alaska system now about 25 years ago, so I appreciate the question about how people have changed over time. My wife actually also is a graduate of the program. She's the school counselor here at Harborview Elementary in downtown Juneau, and so I appreciate what you're saying. When I did my student teaching, for example, to get back to the comment you made about the challenges that our young people face today, in some instances as a middle school teacher, simply the fact that a student showed up in school, no matter how they performed that day, the fact that they showed up was a victory for certain students. And so and I'm thinking to my wife's experience here, where there are many languages in the school, there are many children coming from single-parent homes, troubled homes, so it is a changed environment. And I would say that from my experience of working with the faculty and the staff at UAF, UAA, and UAS, many of the professors are, in fact, skilled teachers. They've come into the university system after having a career or a good portion of their career in the classroom. And many of them are experienced rural teachers as well and continue to travel out because of the structure of our programs, which I can talk more about here in a moment, the Masters of Arts in Teaching, for example. You know, they're expected to fly out and supervise student teachers today in schools all across Alaska. So as I talked, for example, about University of Alaska faculty, they're traveling all over the state, and that's true for UAA and UAF as well, especially given the fact that the greatest demand for new teachers is in the rural areas. And so they're literally sleeping on gym floors, that sort of thing, to provide that supervision. And a key part of our accreditation, both as an institution, all three of the major units of the university, through our accrediting body and through the National Council on the Accreditation of Teacher Education's NCATE, which has accredited all three of our institutions, is the notion of continuous improvement. And so we're very attuned to the importance of our faculty continuing to provide, you know, the best possible education. And so as an example of that, our faculty here in Juneau have just begun offering what's a MOOC. You may or may not have heard about a MOOC. A MOOC is called a massively online course that's available widely, and that course happens to be on differential learning styles. So it speaks, I think, right to the point that you're talking about, that young people learn in different ways today. Anyone with a child knows that you know, they're more handy with their thumbs on an iPhone or what have you than you know, I think back, we didn't even have personal computers, as you can probably appreciate, not all that long ago. So new technologies are changing things, the way that young people learn. And so we're continuing to bring into the classroom the best research on how students learn, brain research, reading styles, diverse learning styles. So it's something we think a lot about in that spirit of continuous improvement. And it will never end. We'll always have to be looking at how do we ensure that the instruction that we're providing in the classroom, the oversight of student teachers, things of that nature, is addressing the changing environment in which those teachers work. So I think your point is absolutely right on the mark, and something we think a lot about every day.
Yes, please.
I mean, that's good to hear, because I've asked that question almost every year, and this is the first time someone said, oh yeah, they go out and they're doing that. How long has that been happening? Because no one's ever said that before.
Yeah, it's been in place for quite a while, but I would say with the renewed emphasis on preparing teachers for rural communities in particular, very diverse cultures, languages, and so forth, that's something that we're renewing our efforts. And I think all three of our major units, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Southeast, are working to provide that type of focus on diverse learning styles.
Thank you, Dr. Thomas. I appreciate your comments on young teachers going out to sleeping on gym floors. And I think I could have done that 30 years ago, but today I would not appreciate that at all. And I find that amusing. The numbers you gave us, I think there's a connection there that's probably pretty important. 70% of rural teachers out of state, 23% of urban teachers out of state. But I would suspect that some of those urban teachers are funneling in from the rural teachers. Wouldn't that be true? That's been my experience of people in teaching the villages and that I've represented. Pretty soon they're teaching in the bigger cities. So is there a connection there we should be aware of? Is there a percentage that you can give us of rural teachers hired? 23% are from out of state, but there must be a percentage that actually are from in state but have been teaching in rural Alaska. Is there a connection there that we can find?
So there certainly, I quoted earlier, about 140 teachers change school districts in a given year, and the rural element is part of that. Figure is the percentage. I don't know if Diane would have that off the top of her head or not.
No, and I don't expect you to. I mean, but it is an interesting phenomenon in Alaska that rural teachers move to urban Alaska. So, I mean, yep. We can't really beat our chests about, you know, having so many out-of-state teachers when, in fact, they do eventually stay in the state. Further questions? Thank you. Please continue.
I've got a little bit
please.
More. In response to a legislative question that occurred, why are some education graduates not teaching? We wanted to offer some information on that. Right? The Center for Alaska Education Policy Research conducted a survey of recent graduates to answer that question. And they found lack of job availability, particularly where they wanted to teach, so the place-committed person was the biggest single reason. Many were not able to relocate because they needed to stay in their home community because of family, personal reasons. or a choice of environment, like weather, lifestyle, teaching, or living conditions. Those were the primary reasons not to relocate. Some decided to continue their education and further their education or continue it in a new direction. And then the other piece, I suppose, is the elementary ed teachers wanting to stay in the urban areas, and there weren't sufficient numbers of jobs for them. So those are the key reasons. Next, I wanted to hit some challenges. And these are largely questions for which, you know, we are investigating them. We talk about continuous improvement. The university's strategic direction initiative, one of our key themes is partnership with Alaska schools. You know, that's all about continuous improvement and the focus on that. So we're constantly asking questions. So what are the challenges? The first challenge this year is, will school districts hire? The Fairbanks North Star Borough canceled their recruitment day, their job fair, because they're expecting to lay off teachers. Right? That's clearly going to affect our new graduates. One of the questions we have is, will the new teacher evaluation system based on student scores, will that negatively impact districts' willingness to engage student teachers? And will that impact our education programs? That's a question. We don't know the answer to that yet. And will there be more consistent incentives or elements like that for teachers to go out and teach in rural areas? That's been kind of district by district, as money's available, those kinds of things. So finding some more consistency there. So those are kind of some of the key questions that we have about moving this process further. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague here, Provost Caulfield.
Mr. Chair, again, thank you. I'm Rick Caulfield. I'm Provost, or the Chief Academic Officer, if you will, at the University of Alaska Southeast. And I work closely with my colleagues at UAA and UAF. Before I say a bit more about the highlights of our teacher preparation programs, I just wanted to comment on Representative Ledoux's question about housing. It brought me back to when my wife did her student teaching in a small Athabascan community of Arctic Village, population 180 up in the Brooks Range. That was many years ago, and our house was the old generator shack for the school. They built a new generator shack, and so they put the student teacher into the generator shack. And it wasn't bad, but every morning at 8:30 it became the preschool, so we had to clear out, and the preschool would come in until about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. And then when the dentist came to town, which happened every other month, and set up his chair, our preschool slash home became the dentist's office. And so it points to the challenges that the teachers do face. I think one of the things we're trying to do as we educate our teachers, not only in diverse learning styles and reading and math and so forth, is an awareness of the kinds of conditions under which they'll likely work. And I will say that that experience for my wife and me was extraordinarily beneficial, and people were very kind to us and so forth. So I look back fondly on that experience, even though it was living in a generator shack, shared with the preschool and the dentist. So I wanted to just take a moment to talk a bit about the UA teacher education programs, again, working across all three academic units. And having worked at the university system now for about 25 years, I do want to share with you that I think the level of collaboration between the different units of the university system under President Gamble's leadership is far greater than it's ever been. So I'll talk in a moment about the Alaska Teacher Education Consortium, but we are actively working together to streamline our programs, to ensure that students are getting quality education wherever they are in the state, that we're appropriately using our resources effectively across the state. And I do want to mention as well, I think Commissioner Hanley is here in the audience, and the partnership, the essential partnership that our university programs have with the Department of Education and Early Development is terrific. And so I want to thank him for his support and that of his staff and the work that we do.
Thank you, Dr. Crawford. We have a question.
Sorry.
Thank you. You're speaking about collaboration across the three units, and one of the things we've heard over the years is the problem with transferable credits. Is that all resolved, at least for this segment of the university offerings? Do any teachers taking, say, a distance learning class through Southeast have problems getting getting credit for that at UAA or UAF?
Through the chair, this is a topic that is receiving a great deal of attention. President Gamble's really put a spotlight on this for the university system, and the regents I know are very concerned about the question of transferability. And I can say from my perspective that that by and large, credits transfer across the system. And I would say in the area of teacher education, because of the collaboration that I'm talking about between our deans of education and the faculty, I think you generally find very, very good transferability. And where there is an issue that might come up, and sometimes it comes up from a student who's transferring from another program, say out of state, and we need some effort to discern whether those credits can plug in to meet a particular requirement in one of our teacher education programs, that our staff and our faculty work hard to ensure that they can use those credits.
Thank
you. So just to go on, I'll just to say that all three of our major administrative units at UAA, UAF, UAS offer teacher preparation programs both in a face-to-face format and online through what we refer to as e-learning. E-learning is a phrase that refers to the growing array of tools for offering distance education across the state. All three of our programs at those three major administrative units are accredited by the National Council for Accreditation of Teacher Education, or NCATE. And NCATE is one of two federally recognized accrediting bodies for teacher education programs across the country. And going through that process requires an intensive self-study, active engagement with a variety of community members, school districts, Department of Education and Early Development, and involves a site visit by evaluators from across the country. So all three of our University of Alaska teacher education programs are NCATE accredited. All of our teacher education students in the initial certification program must pass a nationally recognized test, the Praxis 1 and content-specific Praxis 2 exam that are nationally normed. So we want to be sure that Alaska is in line with the rest of the country in terms of the quality of our teachers and the knowledge of subject area material that they're going to need to be using in the classroom. All of our programs both offer initial certification, again, through face-to-face and online learning. UAA also offers initial certification in early childhood education and early childhood special education, some areas that have been in great demand. In addition to the initial certification, getting your initial teacher certification, all three programs offer endorsements and certificates that are targeted to specific subject areas or disciplines that are needed by districts, and that includes a reading specialist, cross-cultural education, and special education. That's for those who already have their initial certification. And then we mentioned the fact that you can complete your education degree through e-learning or online, and that includes the Bachelor of Arts in Elementary Ed and Special Education. At the graduate level, students can earn a Master of Arts in Teaching online, Master of Education, Masters of Special Education, and Educational Leadership and Principal Certification. So again, I think over the last 20 to 30 years, we've seen a significant increase in online offerings. And I'll just tell you, having taught many online courses myself, the technology today is really impressive. I mean, when I first began teaching online, it was simply a telephone. And sometimes the students in the villages that I was working with would go down to the one telephone in the community at the tribal hall or the city office or whatever it might be, and stay there on the line for an hour and a half while they participated in that class. And I can tell you that the quality of service, both because of the expansion of the internet, it's not perfect yet. There's still parts of the state that don't have really, really good high bandwidth, but in many parts of the state now, we have the bandwidth to provide really high-quality online learning with two-way interaction, chat rooms, use of video technology, things of that nature. And again, in that spirit of continuous improvement and the technology changing, we're always looking at ways that we can continue to add to those tools so that students have access to a really high-quality education. In addition to the initial certification, teacher certification program, and endorsements and certificates for those who already have those, we also offer a number of ongoing professional development opportunities for educators, again, both face-to-face and online. And these are commonly conducted in partnership with the state's Department of Education and Early Development. Getting back to Representative Wilson's question about continually updating our skills so that our current teachers and certainly those who are just getting their teacher certification have the very best information available. So just for example, last weekend in Anchorage, we had the ASTE conference, the Alaska State Technology and Education Conference, where we know that the technology is changing rapidly. We want our teachers to be informed and knowledgeable about the tools and how they can be used to affect learning. That's really what it's about. It's not the technology in and of itself. It's really about what students learn. And so that's an example of ongoing professional development. Vice President Thomas mentioned the number of programs across the state that are especially focused on Alaska Native teachers, and obviously to the extent that we can prepare more Alaska Native teachers to remain in their own communities or in their own regions because they have the knowledge of the culture and the language of those places, the better. I remember back probably 20 and 30 years ago, we've had a number of programs over the years, the Arctic program back in the late 60s and early 70s, the Exceed teacher education program that was housed out of UAF, and I worked with a number of those students over the years. They were all cohort-based and attempts to bring paraprofessionals in particular, those who are working as teacher aides in those schools together and help them go on to become certified teachers. And it had some success. It had some costs associated with it because it involved our faculty living in places like Dillingham and Bethel and Nome and Kotzebue and Galena. So we've experimented with some of those over time. We've had some success. I don't think there's any one that we can point to that says that's the perfect solution. If we could have done that, we would be continuing it today. But that said, with the proliferation of new technologies, the internet access that students really across the state now have to these online e-learning programs, we feel that we're providing a good opportunity. Would we love to see more Alaska Native teachers? Absolutely. And we'd love to continue working with districts to find ways to bring those paraprofessionals or others into the teaching profession. And just to wrap up here, there was reference earlier to the Alaska Teacher Education Consortium. This was a new entity. With President Gamble's encouragement and the support of our deans and faculty, we held the first Teacher Education Consortium meeting last fall, and we have the next one scheduled here in Juneau for March 26th. And not unlike what the university has done with other economic sectors of the state, where we've brought together industry leaders in construction technology, process technology, healthcare, this is an opportunity for us to bring together key leaders from the educational community, including Commissioner Hanley and his staff, representatives from the Alaska Association of School Boards, the school administrators, Bruce Johnson's here in the audience, Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, the Alaska PTA, NEA Alaska. So to bring key leaders from various organizations around the state to continue to tell the university what can we do to improve the quality of our overall teacher education programs. So it's a sounding board. It's an opportunity for us in that spirit of continuous improvement to listen to what those involved with the teacher education programs and hiring our graduates are saying about our programs. Mm-hmm. And on the March 26th meeting here in Juneau, for example, we're focusing on bringing in superintendents who hire our graduates to tell us, how are we doing? Are there areas where we really need to redouble our efforts or improve the focus in a particular area, whether it's math, reading, special ed, whatever it might be? So the Alaska Teacher Education Consortium is an effort on the part of the university to keep our ear to the ground, if you will, on what we need to be doing to improve our programs. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop. I guess, well, one final thing. On the back side of a handout, and it's two figures that are actually in the SB 241 report, you have figure one, simply the information about the production of teacher education graduates between 2006 and 2012. So this would be in the back of the SB 241 report.
Thank you.
It may not be in the back. Let me actually find the page.
Page 11.
Page 11.
Page 11 of the report. Okay, thank you.
Page 11. For the, let's see. Yes, it's page 20 for the graduates. And then the other figure is special education graduates. And I wanted to just make note of this for the committee, because you'll see a fivefold increase in the number of special education graduates between 2006 and 2012. And I bring it up because, first of all, of course, there's great demand for special education qualified individuals in urban and rural districts. And it reflects the kind of partnership, identifying where the needs are, university really putting a spotlight on expanding program opportunities for students in those areas. For example, at UAS, we just created a bachelor's degree in special ed so that students can come into that program. So expanding the opportunities in these high demand, high need areas. And special ed, I think, really shows how we've been able to respond and put those people to work in service to our communities and our kids. So with that, I'll stop, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, Dr. Caulfield, along those lines, I see the increase in SPED grads. It's good. How much of the need in Alaska does that fulfill, and how many teachers do you have to bring in from outside with a special education certification?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I don't have that information in front of me, but I don't know if Diane Hirschberg, who's with the center from UAA, is able to speak to that.
Maxie online may have that. We're in the middle of actually doing that work, so I don't. I can't.
Okay. Suggestion is that maybe there's somebody online that can answer that question. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, it would be Lexi Hill, and I don't know if she's able to hear the question and respond.
Lexi Hill, are you online?
Yes, I am, and they're so slick. They unmuted me, and sadly, I don't have that number in my head. Percentage-wise, it's a little bit higher, but not hugely higher than the overall number of teachers or percent of teachers that we're bringing in from outside.
Thank you, Ms. Hill.
A follow-up. And Ms. Hill, I guess if you can provide us that information, that'd be great. I'd also like to know what opportunities the University of Alaska system has for providing special education teachers with board certification in behavioral analysis, the BCBA credential. I don't expect to have that.
I'll write that down and look at it.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so I'm going to go back to where we were a while ago. First of all, hi, Lexi. This is Laura Reinbold. I just wanted to ask a question. According to Sarah Palin, back in 2008, this new statute was put in 14.4.190B, and it says to close the gap between known teacher employment vacancies in the state and the number of state residents who complete teacher training. Right now, it looks like you guys are on a trend of improvement, which I think is really, really good. However, I find it alarming that school districts still continue to hire around 400 teachers each year from outside of Alaska. And I'm wondering if that's still, on the front burner of you guys improving that trend of reducing, importing 400 teachers from outside.
So it absolutely is part of our agenda. And the special efforts that we're making, particularly in rural Alaska, speak to that, I think. We're actively changing the Future Educators of Alaska process to be more like the Alaska Native Science and Engineering program that has been very successful in moving students up into science and engineering in particular. So we're modeling after processes that we see working best. So we're making that move on future educators and related programs in that regard. Some of the elements of recruiting people into the teaching profession clearly are outside of our control. Salary and benefits packages, living conditions, the cost of energy in rural Alaska. So while we do our best to inform people and potential students about careers, in a variety of ways, you know, those challenges remain.
Thank you, Representative Reinbold. Senator Gardner, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Thank you. Thinking about bringing in special ed teachers from outside, my understanding is there's been a national shortage of special education teachers. So I'm just kind of wondering if it's more difficult to get special ed teachers to come from outside than it is to get other teachers, and how is it that we're being successful in finding people that are actually needed elsewhere for other teachers? There have been lots and lots of layoffs. I think 100,000 teachers laid off in California, so it's not surprising if they'll take a job here. But I'm just wondering about special ed.
I don't have information on that. Rick, do you?
Mr. Chair, I don't either, but we can be sure to look into that for you and provide additional information. The chair referenced a moment ago a sort of a not uncommon cycle of teachers coming into the state or Alaskans moving into the teaching profession, and as they continue with their career, starting out perhaps teaching in rural communities and then moving into urban communities, that's not uncommon. Interestingly, with Alaska's increasingly diverse urban schools, those teachers with the experience of working in rural areas really bring a lot of value to the schools because of the many languages, diverse cultures, very large native population, even in our urban schools, of course. And so there's a real benefit to that. And then I think we also see a number of certified teachers who've been in the classroom for a period of time who then choose to go on to become counselors, as my wife did, or special education teachers, that sort of thing. So one of the things we're striving to do is ensure that there is a clear pathway for those who are experienced in the classroom but want to go on and specialize and move in some different areas, reading specialists, special ed, that sort of thing. So I think those opportunities do exist. We can provide some additional information, though, about special ed certification and the status of special ed teachers outside of state as well.
Thank you, Dr. Arthur. Any of these questions that come up, if there are answers to them, please provide them either to Tim here or Jim, either one, and they'll distribute it to all of us. Thank you. Are you satisfied, Senator, with your...
Thank you, yes.
We have several other questions from Representative Sadler, Wilson, and then Seaton. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chair. Sequence. Not sure who can best answer the question, but how popular is the is a master's level, the Master's of Arts in Teaching? And is the master's degree necessary or helpful in qualifying as a highly qualified teacher? Sure, it's helpful, but is it necessary?
Many teachers pursue a master's degree as part of their continuing development, and it leads to increases in salary typically. So there's clearly an incentive to do that. I would say over the past decade or two, there's been a trend away from the MAT and more towards an MED, because the path is a little bit clearer, and instead of pursuing an MAT in biology or physics or math or something, they tend to now pursue an MED.
And for the record, what's that stand for?
Master of Arts in Teaching or Masters of Education.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, if I may just elaborate on that a little bit too. Commonly, those coming into the Master of Arts in Teaching have they've earned their university degree elsewhere, and sometimes there might be a break between the time they complete their baccalaureate degree and they want to come back into the teaching profession. The MAT offers probably the most direct route for those who already have a college degree in a content area that's useful for the schools. To get back in and complete their teacher certification. And so we have the advantage, in fact, of those who are somewhat more experienced. They're not straight out of college in many instances. They're coming back. They might include military veterans, for example, and others who bring that life experience and maturity, if you will, into the classroom once they complete the MAT. So, again, it points to the value of having a variety of different pathways for those who are right out of college going into teaching, or those who've been away from college for a period of time, have a previous career or life experience that they bring back into the teaching profession and into the classroom. That can be a benefit.
Thank you. I'll move on then to Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned earlier how kids learn with their fingers nowadays, and that definitely is something that is happening. You know, they just learn differently than they did when I was growing up. And so do you offer any kind of classes? Because we've got probably thousands of teachers in the state that are my age and that are...
They're much older.
that are... they're traditional teachers, and they really have a hard time getting a handle on the hands-on type part. They're just not used to doing that. Do you offer classes for teachers so that they can try to learn how to adapt? I mean, I know the schools want to give in-service to do this, but you can't learn that in 2 days, you know. And so is there a class or two or a class that lasts a while so that teachers can really learn how to do this? Because, you know, right now we're trying to incentivize oil companies to have more oil production. Well, maybe we could come up with a way to incentivize teachers to pay for their own increased education so that they will learn how to get to kids through their fingers.
One of the things that we know is teachers learn how to use new devices, new technology, more through interaction with each other than they do through any sort of formal class. And so creating opportunities for them to do so is a big part of what the school districts and EED would do. So part of the commissioner's one-to-one initiative would create some training centers in cooperation with vendors, if you will, Apple or Dell or whatever it might be, and provide training that way. But again, the vast majority, the real teaching element side of technology comes from teachers interacting with other teachers. What's working for you? How did you do this? How did you approach that? And so creating opportunities for them to share those on a regular basis will be a big part of that work.
So, in other words, you don't offer anything like that?
We do. There's a graduate certificate, for instance, in innovative technology that goes along with the teaching program. So certainly it does exist. And most of our programs require that teachers come in with a laptop and bring it to their class with them. So that's a, you know, the incorporation of technology is fundamental to our education programs.
Representative Seed, then Representative Zoom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address the teacher preparation itself, not so much the degrees, but with the adoption of Common Core in most of our state and across the United States and the Alaska standards as well, there's a real change in assessment from specific knowledge to integrated analysis. And I'm wondering, are we changing the teacher preparation so that teachers are being prepared for teaching in ways that measurement is going to take place in Common Core? Or are we still preparing teachers to teach much more simple subject analysis and single subject analysis and all? And are, if we're not doing that integrated cross-subject analysis, are we going to be having our teachers that are coming out right now unprepared for what's going to be measured of students?
So Provost Caulfield may want to add to what I say here, but the Alaska standards form the basis of the teacher education programs, and the programs are revised as needed as curricular core curriculum changes with regard to the standards in the state. And so absolutely responsive. We want our teacher graduates to be experts on that, the Alaska standards. And so this is, you know, this is fundamental to our educational approach with new teachers. I'm not sure I can add more than that. I took part in helping develop those, particularly in mathematics. And so the university is more broadly engaged in that conversation, even outside the schools of education. But the fundamental basis of our teacher prep programs is a focus on the Alaska standards.
So. And Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, I'm just raising it not for, just because I'm concerned that it's not just the standards, but what's going to be measured in those standards is complex integrated analysis. And if we are not changing our teacher preparation for assessments based on those kinds of integrated analysis, then, you know, they're going to, these new teachers are going to arrive into the schools at the time when all of a sudden there's going to be upheavals in how to get to those kinds of outcomes from students, not, you know, the particular. So I just appreciate it as we go forward and in the university's conversations, you specifically address and make sure that we are looking at educating and giving teachers the ability to know how to educate kids to do those complex analyses and that integration. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I could respond from a region perspective, I think it's a great question. We're seeing it, of course, in healthcare. And so as chair of academic affairs, I'm making plenty of notes here. And it gets back to the point of strategic influence on where we're headed. We'll make sure we cover that within the Academic Affairs Committee.
And thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Representative Ledoux and then Senator Huggins. Representative Ledoux.
To follow up on Representative Wilson's question about older teachers not necessarily getting the modern technology, and I can kind of understand that as somebody who almost has the help desk living at their office. But to the extent, and I don't know how big of a problem it is, I guess I'm sort of considering that if it is a significant problem, like you mentor younger teachers with older teachers so that the older teachers can teach the younger teachers a lot of things that the older teachers know through their wisdom. Have you ever considered mentoring some of the older teachers with the younger teachers so to help them get the modern culture of technology?
Mr. Chair, I think that we do have a very active teacher mentorship program. I think you're aware of that and you've referenced that. And I think it produces some really impressive results, and it's the type of sharing of knowledge, older, more experienced teachers with new teachers, with the hope of the new teachers being even more successful. My experience, and it is only anecdotal, is that teachers themselves are learners. Successful teachers are always learning. And it's not to say that there won't be individuals who really are ready to retire and should retire. But in my interactions over the years, I'm impressed at how teachers are lifelong learners and are learning to use the technologies, perhaps not to the same degree that a 24 or 26-year-old would be, but they're lifelong learners. They have a passion for learning and teaching, and that's why they're in the education field. So I actually don't see that as a major issue. I understand the question, but I think they're continuing to learn, and it's a two-way street. We learn from our young people, you know, in the classroom, out of necessity. You realize that the learning styles have changed, and so if you didn't get it in a university classroom, you're learning it in your own classroom every day, where students are continually challenging you to learn new things, and you have to get out ahead of that with the changing technology. So I don't see it personally as a major issue. It's not to say there aren't individuals who really probably should retire.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you very much, and a good presentation. And as a backdrop, you know, I'm an advocate for a great leap forward, to borrow a term from the Chinese, because, I mean, you know, to be quite frank, the conversations we have, we gloss over the symptoms of we're sinking in comparison to our international competitors in education, not rising. So I think we have to be honest with one another in that respect. However, I really commend you for a couple things that's been said, in which I would ask you to make sure we pay attention to that, is about what students learn. The other one was strategic influence. And I would say strategic influence will get us to what students learn. And let me just give you my two cents on that for what it's worth. I do not blame the teachers for greater than 60% of this, but they are at least 50% of the burden of moving us forward. You know, it was a mention of accreditation. I mean, as we recall, mid-90s, I think UAF lost its accreditation in teacher certification. Is that accurate? So there's a span of, we finally identified what we were producing wasn't to some quality standard, as was mentioned by the agency. So I doubt that that's something that's echoing across, you know, our state. But, you know, how long was that going on before the accreditation was lapsed? And then, as I recall, we went to a five-year education program where you had to get a master's degree and you had to take the praxis. And I think that's where the praxis came about. Is that accurate? Is that we instituted praxis? So my first question for you is the graduation or the pass rate on the praxis. What is the pass rate on the praxis?
I do not know that. Lexi Hill may have that information.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you get that back. I'm not trying to sharpshoot you. I think it's just an important thing for us to recognize. But, you know, you were quite frank in your report in some cases, and I will quote, too many of our students don't graduate from high school. And you go on to say that the state's graduation rate is still in the bottom quarter of states. So I'm just using, you know, what you're saying. And I appreciate your being frank about that. And that of those that graduate, you know, about 50% in most states go off to college, according to your report. In our state, it's 33%. Yeah. But here's the most important part that I would challenge all of us to think about, is that Senator Stevens, some of the others sitting around here, Representative Seaton was part of it. We went around the state. President Gamble was part of it. And one of the symptoms that we were asking questions about was because of the number of students you received on your campus that needed remedial training. And here's my point to the remedial training. It's a closed-loop system. It's about what students learn. You produce the teachers. You got the students from our school system. You produce the teachers from that. They go out and teach, and then they send you students back that need remedial training. So my challenge to you is let's just recognize that and be honest. It's not your fault, per se, that they have to do remedial training on your campus, but you bear some of the burden because you produce the teachers. Would we agree that that's kind of correct or a little bit?
Yes. We absolutely accept that and view that's part of the reason we are shining a light on this and saying it's our clearest feedback loop to self-improvement.
Right.
So,
and of the things that maybe other than a couple of financial pieces here in the Capitol, the single most alarming thing for me that I heard, it was in a room on the fourth floor and we were talking about the performance scholarship and then called the Governor's Scholarship. We were looking at the different scholarship programs, and the Scholars Program, the top 10%, the percentage of students in the top 10% that needed remedial training was appalling. And so, you know, my question to myself was, well, I wonder how that bottom 10% is doing. We don't need an answer to that. I don't need an answer to it. The point being is if our top 10% of students or needing that, you know, at the time, a significant remedial training percentile, it's frightening to me educationally. So it's not all your fault, but you have to take some responsibility. And the other part, I would just encourage us to be candid and straightforward and not take the statistics and just kind of talk around them, because we all bear a burden in this. And having said all that, my wife and I had three children that graduated high school in our state, and they went on and they've done very well, and there are lots of other students like them. And I'm not, what I'm saying is not to say that the teachers are the fault or the professors are the fault, but we all bear burden. And probably the biggest piece of it is on parents and the demographics and what we're sending to you, but we all bear some responsibility. So I would enjoy, you know, some feedback on the praxis and, you know, how we're doing. And I will further say there was a snapshot. I was on the school board in Mat-Su. There was a snapshot in time where if you were a new teacher, you were coming from the University of Alaska teaching system, that teachers were given a pretest before you did the interview for hiring. That's a message that should resonate with all of us. And that was prior to the praxis, but that should be a message to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further questions, comments? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've got, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, CAPER is doing several surveys for you, and would you be able to, as soon as you get those surveys and they're finished, if you would forward them, it would be beneficial for us to be able to look at the answers.
The folks from CAPER are shaking their heads, and they will do that. Thank you. While we're at this point, let me say this has been a really valuable discussion, and I'm really appreciative of the university being here and answering these questions. This is proof that we need to do this on a regular basis. But I'd refer you back to Senate Bill 241, which, as Regent Jacobson knows, was established to develop a relationship with the Board of Regents. And Regent Powers wouldn't expect you to answer all the questions that have been asked. I mean, you're a volunteer and you're on the Board of Regents, but the specifics that were asked are really questions that need to be asked by answered by the administration. But somehow, Mr. President, and all, everyone from the university here and the Regents, I want to get back to a relationship with the Regents. That was the point of Senate Bill 241, and as valuable as this has been, we need to meet with the Regents. We need to know what your thoughts are. And so to that point, maybe I'll ask a question of Regent Powers. It would appear that looking at the entire university with three schools of education, that you're almost combining the schools of education as sort of a statewide school of education. If students can move from one major unit, Fairbanks to Juneau to Anchorage back and forth, and finally wind up with their degrees in education. Is that an issue that we should be looking forward to? Is that something that that you are thinking of combining, or maybe not combining, I know you can't do that, but it does seem to be that there some, does seem like there's more cooperation between the three schools of education than I'm aware of 20 years ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two observations. First of all, two years now that I've been on the Regents, I think one of the things I'm most struck by is the level of cooperation across the Regents in so many areas, whether it's engineering buildings or whether it's education programs, ongoing work. It's very, very remarkable, and I was frankly surprised when I saw that coming on. Relative to education and access, and you heard earlier, there is a lot of attention, especially this past year, paid on transfer of credits, ease of access to the three different MAUs. I do think there will be continued progress made in a seamless transition between the three and coordination of standards across all three MAUs. Very exciting.
Thank you, Regent. Seamless sounds great to me. I appreciate your comments on that. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On a little different subject, when I came in a little bit late, and I don't know whether the advisor advocate subject was covered. I know, you know, the legislature mandated that if you were going to take the Alaska Performance Scholarship, you had to provide for each degree or certificate individual advisor advocate kind of, can you describe how that's working, and have you seen the benefits of that yet? How is that going throughout the entire university system?
I could probably tee it up and then ask either Rick or Dana to speak specifically to it. Again, in the 2 years advising, and it's largely a push of President Gamble, as I understand this, has been front and center on the agenda of the executive, of the full board of Regents and within academic affairs. And it's probably one of the greatest keys to success in moving the students through in a timely fashion. So what we're seeing is a lot of attention paid to advising. I'm aware up in Fairbanks, just anecdotally with friends of my children who are now into the advising, how that's working. But as far as the specific numbers and successes, I'd ask Rick or Dana to speak to that.
So the advising money arrived last July 1st, and so we have some initial information on the feedback loop element. In particular, we know that students are completing more credits this fall, so that puts them on a path to more usual completion date, which is a very positive thing. We also know that the retention rate of degree-seeking students from fall to spring is higher than it has been. So that's the initial evidence that an investment in advising is making a difference. We will continue to track that semester to semester, that retention rate, and of course down the line on the attainment rate. That will be the real judge, and that is 4 to 6 years for a baccalaureate degree, very common kind of thing, especially with our relatively high proportion of part-time students. I would urge a little bit of patience on that piece. Clearly making a difference in education in particular. There are specific staff advisors for education programs and specific rural education advisors to help bridge those students pursuing an education degree. So a real investment there generally, and initial evidence showing that it's paying off.
Thank you. And for the record, that was Dr. Thomas speaking. Further questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you.
Wilson.
Your presentation here that you've given each of us is really good. I haven't had time to read the whole thing, but it's 41 pages, and you did a wonderful job summing it up. And if could we have your notes so that we could, that sums it up so much easier than for us to read 41 pages.
Thank you. If not, we'll have a transcript of this as well. Yes.
Yeah, I have a quick question. It keeps going around, and we talked about mentors, young and old, and so on and so forth. And it comes to mind when we're going back to the rural areas. Do we have a program in our high schools that kind of gets our students going as far as becoming teachers so that they can take some high school courses, get on track to be a teacher, and then are they able to take those courses online? I mean, is it possible to actually be in your village taking some high school courses and then carry on and literally graduate as a teacher without leaving your village?
I'll address one piece of that and then pass the other half to my colleague here. So future educators, is an active process to engage both junior high and high school, although I'll say focused on high school students in the idea of a career in education. As I indicated earlier, about 500 such students engaged currently. Part of that is the offering of dual enrollment coursework, where a student can take a course from the university, earn both high school and university credit, and one of them is effectively exploring a career in education. There's another one that is currently under consideration by our faculty senate to add a second course for such students. So that very clearly, and those are distance delivered. Right? So that part of the bridging and recruitment element is well established, I would say.
And through the chair, as I mentioned earlier, all three of our major units, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Southeast, offer that online opportunity for students in their communities, their home communities. So it is available now for students seeking that initial certification. But I do think you point to an important topic, which is raising the visibility and the attractiveness of becoming a teacher for our middle school and high school students. And of course, we know that that includes focusing on math skills and writing skills and being successful in middle school and high school. The future educators approach is so that high school students are part of a club and they learn, they can interact with quality teachers and learn what it means to be a teacher. And then there's some continued attention to successful models like the Rural Alaska Honors Institute, the Rawhide program at UAF. I actually taught with the Rawhide program myself in years past, and the ANSET program available across the state for students interested in science and engineering, and trying to build on the successes that they've had of peers working together, encouraging each other, really honing their knowledge and their skills through some of those programs as well. So again, in this spirit of continuous improvement, how can we build on what seems to be working in certain areas, engineering and science, for example, and have that linked into teacher education so that young people coming through high school have a positive attitude and mindset towards becoming a teacher. They get the skill foundations that they need in high school to be successful when they get into our teacher education program. So we're continuing to look at those career pathways so we see more young people in Alaska recognizing the opportunities that are out there.
Through the chair.
Yes, just for the record, that was Dr. Caulfield speaking. Now we're back to Dr. Thomas, please.
Thank you. So one of the kind of subtle points in your question is that the path's very clear for elementary ed, all right? For secondary, you need to earn a degree in a specific field. And so the availability there, varies a little bit depending on the field. So there's a little bit of subtlety there, but our effort is to make those available. So that's our focus.
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm going to be less subtle. My question is to the 70% of the folks that we're hiring to rural Alaska. And I guess in my mind what I'm seeing or I think could work are if you have a high school student that really doesn't know where they may be going, but if they become a teacher, if they go down to the elementary side and they work with the teacher as far as getting a credit, being mentored to become a teacher, getting a few credits before they even get out of high school, knowing that, and you really didn't answer the question, are they able to go online and become a teacher? And I guess where I'm going with this, having lived in villages and such myself, there are challenges with folks leaving the village to go leave family, friends, whatever, and go to, quote, the big city to get their teaching degree. These are folks that clearly don't want to leave. I mean, they want to come back to their village. And those are the people that I'm hearing that we want to retain because they're going to stay. They're going to become that elder teacher that teaches, and it's a vicious cycle at that point. So I guess my question is, can you go online and become a teacher without leaving the village?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Okay, first of all, I want to thank you for your service. I know it's a big challenge that you guys have, and I appreciate it. I know some of your volunteers, and I think it's amazing. I believe that the university is in good hands right now. I think we have an outstanding president, and you guys are very impressive. And I guess what my concern is we do invest a lot in education in this state, and sometimes we don't have the best outcomes in this state, as you've seen the data. And so what my question specifically to you, is there any specific thing that we're all in on education, obviously, is there any specific legislation that you need to help us improve our outcomes in this state and make this a better university and have better education in this state? Because we're obviously all very, very passionate about this, and we want to know specifically if there's anything that you need from us to help you.
Just a few comments from a region's perspective, and it gets back to Chairman Stevens' comments. I can't think of legislation at the moment. I think this ongoing report interface with the regions is one way to ensure that, because you certainly feel that strategic movement. The question of the interdisciplinary cross-functional thinking and analytical skills, excellent point. I will make sure that is addressed in academic affairs. So to the point, these ongoing presentations, dialogues, communications is what I think would be helpful for the regions.
Thank you, Regent. Yes, sir.
Through the chair. So helping us solve the broadband access issue is clearly one of those areas. And that extends well beyond education. That's a basic infrastructure issue nowadays, like roads and airports. It will improve, has the potential to improve life in rural Alaska through a variety of means. More telemedicine would be an example. Increased security conversations and the speed at which that occurs. So greater chance for commerce in rural Alaska. So, broadband's not just about education, it's about basic infrastructure for communities. And so helping us solve that one would take us a long way further in ensuring the availability and access and quality of delivery.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Just following up on that for a minute, I mean, we are kind of stuck a little bit in a long lead time to broadband for everywhere. And I just hope that the university and its teaching program is letting teachers know that they don't have to be stuck. I mean, we in our district this last year, we went to an iPod Touch program. It's all, there's apps and they're all down, they're all synced internally. You don't have to have a lot of broadband access, but the teaching that goes on in the classroom is right there, it's hands-on, but it's controlled, it's not just unlimited. And so there's ways of getting the benefits of integrated technology without having to say we've got to wait 8 years until everybody has broadband. So I just hope that as you look at an iPad or an iPod Touch, we're focusing on iPod Touches because the kids can take those home in their pocket and they use them all the time. And so you can extend the school day by having things that they enjoy doing, whether it's preparing and taking photographs and putting them into reports and all those kind of things. So I hope that the university does not limit its scope of technology and thinking to, we got to wait for broadband. And I don't think you're saying that, but I'm just wanting to make sure that we expand that out in our teacher education, because teachers in rural communities can have access for way less than the cost of a textbook to all of these multiple different curriculums for all of the students in there, and it's all synced and other stuff can't be put on, and so the ability is there without getting stuck in the broadband trap. And I'm not opposed to broadband and whiteboards and all that, but I just hope that as we go forward in teacher education, we don't limit teachers' thoughts to, we got to wait until we have broadband so that we can do these things. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Unfortunately, our time is drawing to a close. I really appreciate what the information we've received. It's been invaluable from the university, from the Board of Regents. Thank you very much for being here. I look forward to continuing this discussion in the future and look forward to actually reading your report. Thank you all very much, and we're adjourned.